for November 7th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. It is November. Halloween is over. Time to start celebrating Thanksgiving, everybody's forgotten holiday.
Exactly. If your house is like my house, Christmas music somehow has entered the children's their phones. And they're listening to Christmas music. I'm going, wait a minute. We need to think like Nordstrom's thing. Yeah, there's Thanksgiving, and right. Then there's Christmas.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is coming, kids. You don't skip over just because you have something way more important that happens at the end of December.
Well, they're very excited. And this is the difference between having teenagers, who I think are kind of, just like Halloween, they're kind of trying to remember their youth,
right.
How excited they were, and they're not quite adults yet. And so everything becomes, just maybe of greater importance.
They're finding their own path. They're figuring out what is their thing. Maybe it's not the family thing that they used to do, but there's still that nostalgia factor that they're looking back upon.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. It's an exciting time. It's starting to get dark. And of course, Steve, you got your extra hour of sleep because of daylight savings time.
No, so, I'm an old person. I wake up at the same time every morning, regardless of when I went to sleep. So I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, there you go. You'll be nice and tired.
Well, the nice part is I walk in on Monday morning and wait for the kids to come into school with like bated breath. Like, come on, kids. Come on. I got to teach you something. Come on. Come into school. Come on.
That's where you get lots of coffee.
Yeah.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to go see Thor Ragnarok.
Ragnarok!
Tell me that I need to get to the theater and watch this movie, Chip.
This is probably the great film that you've been waiting for. And let me make sure I'm clear. This is not going to be Casablanca, Wizard of Oz classic. But if you were mom, dad, the kids, sister and brother, you all got forced to go watch this because the son or dad wanted to go see it. Nobody's going to leave this and not find a lot of humor and a lot of fun. And I think that's what Marvel did so well with this movie, is that this is a superhero story. It's not believable. But
so it is an action adventure. There is fighting and all the superhero-y things.
But lots and lots of surprises and humors. Lots of guest stars. Jeff Goldblum is his Jeff Goldblumiest. There's no doubt that his delivery is accentuated by the character.
Yeah, he plays a stereotype of himself at this point.
He's so awesome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we have the regular people. I mean, Chris Hemsworth is very, very funny in this. Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
She is so over the top and so lovingly fun.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, she is just a wonderful actor. Tom Hiddleston playing Loki. Yeah, what don't we like about this guy?
Everything about Loki has been wonderful up to this point. So I have high expectations of that character for this story.
Our real scene stealer is our director, who plays this rock character, this Kiwi.
Okay, his name is Taika Waititi.
Yes, and
that is a made-up name.
No. He is from New Zealand.
Ah, that explains it.
And he's got this really nice voice, man. And he likes to deliver this stuff. And he got this great big monstrous character.
With his little tiny voice.
But he's got this voice, and he's going to deliver some lines. And he truly is. I think the way I heard the story afterwards is this character was only supposed to be in a few scenes.
Yeah.
But Hemsworth liked him, so he kept bringing him back. So he kept showing up in more and more scenes. And there's another part. There's rumors, and I say rumors, like I have all this inside knowledge, but it seems like Hemsworth's, his work with the Ghostbusters film and the improv they did there helped him prepare better for this character.
Wow, this is a comedy on the order of the Ghostbusters?
Well, the Ghostbusters didn't do very well. Okay. This is far
better than that.
Yeah, this is a joyful, playful, fun little adventure.
For the whole family. You've mentioned that there's something in there for everybody.
This is a PG-13 film.
That's awesome.
And it truly is PG-13. But there's no blood and gore. It's just violence in the sense of Thor and Hulk fight. And I could give away a whole bunch of spoilers, but I want you to have the chuckle. The beauty of seeing this with a theater was there was a lot of group chuckling and group laughs. And there's people showing up and you kind of keep going, oh my goodness, oh, this was great.
Nice.
And hey, man, this was really good.
So I look forward to actually getting out to a movie theater and watching that one. You did get a chance to see a movie from last year. This is called Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. This is a story of a chef.
It is. And this is a one of those movies that we talk about, like, oh, I'd like to see it. I'll wait till it comes to streaming. And this was on my list to see. And actually, iTunes had it as their movie of the week maybe a few weeks ago.
Okay.
So I ended up purchasing. iTunes always has a movie of the week. They're 99 cents.
For a rental.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so what you can do is you can pick them up and you can watch them. So I picked it up and then you eventually pick your day and you watch it. And this week I had some time.
So this is a documentary about a guy named Jeremiah Tower that most people have never heard of.
No. And he was a chef. And this took place back in the 70s and 80s. He started working for, I'll back up. He was a chef that created American cuisine as we know it.
Hmm.
You know, American wines, American foods, basically not being pretentious about it, but just saying that our food here is as good as French food there. Because the first restaurant he ended up working at was a Berkeley, California restaurant that served French food. And so he was able to create the menu for that. The restaurant at that point became the place. People were flying in from parts of the country to come to this restaurant.
Wow.
So it worked real well. He ended up leaving this restaurant because the owner of it, definitely was the rock and roll lifestyle, by the way. There was anything and everything you could imagine going on to this restaurant. But anyway, the owner ended up putting out a cookbook. These were all of Jeremiah's recipes and stuff. He said, this is crazy. I'm out of here. He opened his own restaurant called Stars, and it was in a really bad part of town. He fixed it up. It became the go-to destination for the who's who and you and me.
Hmm.
And he became a rock and roll chef. The American rock and roll chef is really what it was. And I say that not that he was a rock and roller. I'm just saying that he was a well-known guy.
Mm-hmm.
He got his start and his love for food because when he was really, really young, his parents would travel all over the world. And they pretty much left him on his own. They would go out and drinking and eating and stuff like that. Well, he was left in these hotels. He was left on these ships. And he would have to go down and eat. And he would collect menus. He would look at the presentation. He would look at the foods that were being presented to him. And that's the type of education that most of us just cannot get. Unless you experience a whole variety of stuff in a whole variety of places, you can't really appreciate like when something is really, really good. Our circle of knowledge is small, maybe our area. His circle of knowledge is much larger.
Yeah, travel is the best education. You can learn so much by going to other places. You never waste money in travel.
Well, he eventually started opening up these restaurants all over the place. His flagship restaurant went out of business, and he basically fell off the face of the earth. And when he fell off the face of the earth, he was gone for a long, long time. He came back to the Greenbrier in New York City, and this was like 25, 35 years later.
Hmm.
And the review when he came back after he got the kitchen in order was they did very well. I can't remember how they got noticed.
Mm-hmm.
If they said that if the only the dining room had better service, would the
service
restaurant get better?
Service was not equal to the actual food that was being served.
So anyway,
that happens.
He had a fallout with those owners. I think he's currently back in exile. I don't know.
Yeah.
Definitely just a kind of a fascinating little ride through a person's life. And one of the unique people of the world. What can I say?
And this week, I got a chance to finish Stranger Things 2. And I find it so interesting that they call it Stranger Things 2. It's not Stranger Things Season 2. They very specifically have given it the name Stranger Things 2, like it's a sequel.
Well, and they did it on purpose. Uh-huh. And they wanted to get this 80s feel. And right. Yes, and when you finish it up, what did you think? Because I finished it up too.
I enjoyed Stranger Things 2 as much as I enjoyed the first one. I think that the characters are very well written. I think the acting is fantastic. I believe everything that's happening on the screen.
It's not true, Steve. It's a story.
I don't know, man. It seemed pretty real. All the special effects are very believable. There was never a moment where I was looking at it going, well, there's the green screen. There's the special effect. That creature couldn't possibly be moving. I never thought that.
Well, getting back to Thor real quick, I think that that's one of the things that will date these movies mm-hmm. very quickly is the green screen. And for Stranger Things, I will agree. I think there's a lot of setup for season 3.
That is my biggest takeaway from season 2 is this is a great sophomore story leading us to a great third season. Hopefully that third season being the finale of the story. We've talked a lot about how a beginning, a middle, and an end are important to storytelling. And there's something about a trilogy that sometimes that fourth one falls flat compared to those three.
And it's really important if we have young listeners, whether it's a family film or not, I would say that this is for the more mature student.
Yeah.
Some kids really can take, you know, the Indiana Jones level of storytelling, mm-hmm. and some people feel that's too scary. So I think this was right on that level. Obviously, there's great special effects.
Uh-huh.
There's definitely something that tags us back to the 80s.
The nostalgia of this definitely stays with me. All the product placement and all the cars and all the clothing and the way there was a whole discussion about how hair should be done, and very, very well done.
All right, so Thor, I would say, is probably an 80-85. I would say Stranger Things is probably a 75-80. These are both 2C.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. I'm very happy with these.
Hopefully we'll get some high scores for this week's movies. The Murder on the Orient Express is coming back to screens this week. This is directed by Kenneth Branagh, one of my favorite directors.
This looks wonderful.
This has all the earmarks of a great film. It's a great story. Agatha Christie wrote an amazing tale, and it has been done enough times now, but this looks like it's the right time for this to come out again.
Murder, Steve. There's murder. We got to figure out who it is.
Murder most foul.
This is the Clue game.
Yes.
Right there on through a story.
And a train.
And a train.
On a train, yes. Okay, take Clue. And you do it on a train. Yes, Murder on the Orient Express, all-star cast, directed by Kenneth Branagh with a ridiculous mustache. Oh my goodness, the mustache on Hercule Poirot is just ridiculous.
And I was actually reading a little bit about the clothing. The clothing is designed to give you clues on who did what.
Colonel Mustard.
There you go. All right, so we also have more movies coming out.
Yep, Daddy's Home Part 2 is coming out.
It's got Mark Wahlberg.
It's got Mark Wahlberg.
Say hello to your mother for me.
And on screen, his father, played by Mel Gibson.
Yes, and they're pretty tough guys.
Tough guys.
And then we have Will Ferrell.
Uh-huh.
And his dad.
John Lithgow.
With the big kiss. With the great big kiss that lasts a long time.
I don't have high expectations for this one, but I think it's going to be a very silly family comedy. My 11-year-old loved the first one, adored it. I think he has seen it 5 or 6 times, and he's looking forward to the sequel.
Well, this is definitely meant for families.
Yeah.
This is a comedy, obviously very light.
That is our light comedy of the week. Then we get into some of our dark comedies. The first one is called Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This is a very dark comedy about a murder that happened and
to a daughter, Steve. That seems very dark.
And the mother, who is very frustrated that the police are not finding the murderer.
So she puts up three billboards.
Yeah, accusing the sheriff of not doing his job well.
All right, so it's got Woody Harrelson playing the sheriff.
Woody Harrelson as the sheriff, Frances McDormand as the mom, and Sam Rockwell as the other deputy sheriff.
There you go.
I have high expectations for this one.
Well, this is going to be more of an acquired taste, but yeah, it'll be something to pick up and watch.
You're right. This is from the director of In Bruges, which is a very strange, dark comedy that came out, I don't know, probably a decade ago, and very acquired taste is, that's a great way to put it. There is one called The Price that is about a young man struggling with so many pressures of young people today. This is an older young person. He's got a job. And
he does. He's working maybe as a stockbroker or something.
Some high pressure financial job.
He's got a prescription drug addiction, and there's something going on. There's some. It looks like there's some insider trading. And all I can say is this looks very interesting, and I would look forward to seeing it at some point.
Yeah. Something happens, and there's a whole adventure that happens with a lot of violence and running and shooting.
But Steve, maybe there's a movie out there that you'll go, WTF.
Yeah. There's another dark comedy opening this week.
Why the face, Steve? Why the face?
That features Jason Ritter, the son of John Ritter, who's a wonderful actor.
Yes.
And takes this part very seriously. This movie is called Bitch.
Well, mom snaps, and mom all of a sudden thinks she's a dog. Now, she doesn't turn into a real dog.
She just acts like a vicious dog.
So they put her in the down in the basement.
And try to deal with life.
And then she attacks as you open up the basement.
This is a very dark, dark story about mental health issues, about having a psychotic break, about the struggles of life getting to you, and you do whatever you do to cope.
Steve, it looks like he's an absent dad that's not really aware of what's going on.
Yeah, my favorite line in the trailer is, go pick up my kids from school. And the assistant says, where do your kids go to school? And the dad has no idea. He says, I don't know. Google it.
There you go.
That's how you find out information about your kids. It looks interesting. There's a lot of interesting. We're getting right into big movie time. We're going to get all the great movies coming out the next couple of weeks.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. And, you know, I meet a lot of interesting people in my line of work at school.
That's what happens when you're a teacher plugged in like Steve.
Yeah, I am certainly plugged in. Sometimes that's bad, but I meet a lot of interesting people. I met an author. His name's Alan Woodrow, and he came to my school to talk to my students about his 7 novels that are aimed right in where their target is. My students love reading because I tell them that they love reading.
Then we should bring him on, because my understanding is we should celebrate his birthday this week.
Oh, that's right. Yesterday was his birthday. Welcome, Alan Woodrow. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. I'm so, so happy to talk to you again. We had such a fun time talking with the kids at my school a couple of weeks ago that I figured, you know, we need to tell the world about Alan Woodrow and all of his wonderful novels. Your latest is called Unschooled. That one came out in August, and it's about 2 fifth grade students determined to remain best friends even while they're named captains of competing teams during a school spirit week.
It came out the end of August, right around the beginning of school year.
Yeah, these books, your writing is aimed right at my students' age level, that fifth grade, fourth grade kind of level. A little bit more advanced than a picture book, but not quite to the novel. Well,
it is a novel.
It is a novel. Your books are novels. What drew you to writing for that age group?
Well, I started writing for kids when I had kids around that age. They had just graduated picture books, and they were just graduating around chapter books and kind of expanding to novels. And I was reading along with them because they were still struggling a little bit. And I was finding these books to be pretty awesome. These weren't necessarily books that were around when I was a kid. I didn't remember having such a wide selection of rich, interesting, well-written books for that age group. And so I discovered it along with my kids. I was really fascinated by the books and the quality, and decided that, you know, I would love to write books like this. So really it was my discovering the books that were similar to the books I'm writing now that made me decide that I wanted to try my hat at it too.
It's funny how much our kids influence our life.
Well, you get that second opportunity to revisit all those things from your children, from your childhood.
Yeah.
And then all those things that you remembered that you forgot to read, you're like, well, I guess I'll read that with them.
So Unschooled looks at playing fair and friendship and loyalty and teamwork. Do you think that these are important themes to discuss in today's schools?
Well, certainly. I mean, there certainly isn't anything new. I think they were important to discuss when we were kids as well. Kids are faced with so much pressure, the same pressures we had as kids, family pressure, peer pressure, but it's even more exaggerated today with all the social media pressures that they get, especially when they get a little older than elementary school, and they're really much more involved in those types of things. And when you are influenced by so many voices telling you different things to do, and some of those things are not always encouraging you to play fair, that you are involved in sports, and sometimes the coaches and the parents in sports are much more aggressive and much more competitive than perhaps parents were, at least when I was younger. And so you're having all these influences, all these sources, and it's easy to forget to be kind. It's easy to forget that winning by playing fair is more important than winning. And so Unschooled touches on that. It's about a class is split into two, and cheating and sliming and all kinds of horrible things they're doing to each other in order to win, just to win. So it's easy to kind of fall in that trap and to not embrace the importance of just playing for playing's sake and learning. So I think it's an important lesson for kids, and certainly though it's been an important lesson for kids for as long as there's been a childhood, not just today. It's just, I think, amplified a little bit now.
Well, in fact, I was just listening to something, and there was a quote that was used was, when I was young, I really liked people who were clever. He goes, but now that I'm older, I really like people who are kind. And that idea of kindness, it seems like it's a great theme, because I guess when you're young, you're kind of playing with language, or you have a perceived reality that may be true or not true. But later on, you just recognize we're all trying to get our way through the world, and a little kindness can make the world much better for each of us.
Yeah, word I like to use is empathy. You know, kids aren't always empathetic to other kids. When you're growing and you're learning and you're pretty much wrapped in your own world, and it's hard to look at the world from other people's eyes. Learning that ability, that just because it's something that you want, it might be something that hurts someone else, and learning to identify those moments and learning to think outside of your own self to how others are thinking and feeling and being treated is what gives us that kindness and gives us that understanding, and helps us to be better people and better part of society. I think a lot of people might say that that's one of the things that's missing a lot of areas of society or government or whatever, is that lack of empathy or sympathy for others who are different than us.
That's where reading comes in, that ability to live 1,000 lives. You read 1,000 books and you can see things from other people's perspectives.
Learn about culture from other people, from other parts of the world. That's what reading can do for you. So is Unschooled based on real life events? Did you have a fifth grade where you were sliming people, cheating and pranking your fifth grade friends?
He's the victim.
No. Unfortunately, my life was not nearly as interesting as it is for the kids in Unschooled. But, Unschooled is about a Spirit Week, and the kids are cheating and conniving in order to win Spirit Week. And the end of Spirit Week is a big field day where there's like an Olympic type of activities and events going on. And when I was in fifth grade, we had our own version of a field day, and each kid got to pick two different events. And one of the events I was in was the fast walking event, where you had to walk like a half mile, but you couldn't run, you had to walk. And I had a big lead. I was like lapping the field, and I was disqualified because the teachers claimed I was running and not walking. And I'm still bitter about this. I think they were wrong. I was walking, and I can still remember being very disappointed at the time, and I still think I got cheated. So this is kind of my revenge.
We're a therapy show too, so we'll be talking deeper about that.
That's right.
You visit a lot of schools. You go all around the country visiting schools and talking to kids about literacy and about your books. What's the best part about walking into these schools?
Well, as a writer, you know, I don't have a business office where I'm going to. I'm not around coworkers all day or even a boss standing over me all day. I'm working often at my home office and staring at a computer with no one standing over me telling me to do anything. And it can be challenging and lonely, I guess you'd say. Visiting schools and talking to kids is my one real opportunity to not only meet, you know, the audience who's reading my books, but to be around kids, to talk to them, to remember what it's like to be a kid. When my kids were younger, it was easier because I had lots of kids going in and out of our house. Now my kids are a little bit beyond the age where I'm writing to. So schools afford me the real opportunity to mix and mingle a little bit with kids who are my target audience, but also just to get out of the house and to meet people and to socialize, which is tough sometimes as an author, unless you're doing things like visits or speeches or panels or conferences or that kind of thing.
And I assume you meet a lot of interesting teachers and parents.
Lots of interesting teachers
who try to introduce you in their schools and forget your name while they're introducing you because they're really bad with names. But the idea of getting around a community around a book is something that we've talked about many times. And the shared experience of reading a book and then getting to meet the author is really an experience that I encourage everybody to try to meet some humans out there. Books are made by people, and you are one of those people, and you love hats.
I'm not sure about that segue.
That's smooth, yes. Baby.
I have my author hat. And yes. I always make sure I wear my author hat when I go to any school. And it's the kids often get a kick out of my hat stories. So it's a weird, quirky little thing I like to do.
Well, that's not the only thing kids have to do. My understanding is you work under a pen name at times, too.
Yeah, you know, I work on actually a few pen names, not just one. I do have seven novels. We'll have seven novels under my own name. I also write under other names. I write a lot directly for classrooms, directly for schools or educational publishers. And they're not mass market trade books you'd find at your library or your bookstore, but you might find them on your bookshelf in a school, and they help promote reading and promote excitement and are educational in that way. I also write for the Cartoon Network, not the shows, but I write a bunch of books for them as well. So I have a lot of different writing outlets for kids, not just the ones that you might find on the shelf.
Is that a good way for kids to be encouraged to read more? Is there finding a story on the shelf that is from something they love from TV or a movie?
I think anything that encourages kids to read should be embraced. Kids shouldn't be forced to read something they hate. Is this going to make them resentful? It's going to make them dislike reading. I hated books when I was a kid. I never read books when I was in elementary school. I loved comic books. And my
so did we.
Parents didn't discourage me. I spent all my money on my money from mowing the lawns and from shoveling walks. I spent it on comic books, and I had hundreds and hundreds. And eventually I learned how to read from comic books. Mm-hmm. And I eventually expanded my love of reading to regular books and all kinds of things. But if I hadn't loved comic books when I was a kid and not been dissuaded from reading them, I would never have grown up with a love of books that I acquired a little later. I never would have thought of writing the kind of books that I'm reading today, or writing today. So definitely I would not discourage anyone from reading anything. It's finding what you love to read, encouraging it, and eventually your love of reading will expand and the kinds of things you love to read will expand as well.
That has definitely happened for Chip and me. We have
love those Harlequin romances.
Well, my wife does. My wife loves those romance novels, and she reads them voraciously. I love science fiction, and I read a lot of science fiction. And yeah, it started with comic books for me.
Sure. Well, a lot of things did. I loved comics as a kid too. It's an easy way to get in and to get into a world. Basically, it's not your own.
To think about something other than your world. That's what reading does for us.
Well, I have a question. Do you have any future projects you want to share with us?
So, Unschooled is actually the second in a series. The first book was called Class Dismissed, and that was the story of a fifth grade class whose teacher quits in the middle of the year, and no one finds out about it, and the class decides to see if they can keep it a secret for as long as they can.
Nice.
And then Unschooled came out a couple months ago. And it takes place in the same school with some of the same students, but it's a totally different story. And those same students in the same school will be appearing in a book coming out next year that takes place on a field trip.
Foreshadowing.
Year after that, nice. I'm working on it. I have a horror gothic novel coming out, but that's not going to be for a little bit now.
Wow.
Okay, so is that horror gothic novel? Is that age appropriate, or is that aimed
for the second graders?
Is that aimed at us middle aged people?
No. Well, hopefully anyone will enjoy any of my books, regardless of their age. But it is aimed toward kids as well.
Oh, very wonderful. Cool. Halloween just passed, and we like our spooky.
We set up the month pretty well.
Yes, we did. Fantastic.
Well, how can listeners find out more about your writings and things that you're working on?
So thanks for asking. They can find my website online. It's Alan Woodrow, and it's ALLANWoodrow.com. And there they can learn about my books. They can go to the Contact Me page, and it'll go right to me directly if they have any questions or comments they have. So, yeah, anyone can reach me through that website.
Fantastic.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to all of your future writings. And boy, you have an imagination that we are going to go and look at some of these books about the teacher disappears and the students take over. Maybe I won't read that one, actually. That sounds like a my job is eliminated kind of a book.
Well, you can always find Unschooled on our Amazon page, Too Much Scrolling. And also, there's many bookstores out there that will have this book, too.
That's right. Thank you again, Alan.
Thank you.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll with It. We've got all sorts of things happening. You have found something that is really interesting. This is an app called Smirky, and you're going to have to tell me all about this.
All right, so it was originally released a few years ago, and it was designed that you would use it as alternative to FaceTime, an alternative to Skype.
Okay.
But when we're talking to each other, the computer program is reading your facial expressions, and it's giving us what the emotions are. So
you're going to read out of your emotion on your face.
So if you're angry with me, if you're not believing me, if you have disdain for me, so if you're talking to your 13-year-old, you don't just have to, you could verify it.
You could verify the disdain. Not just assume.
But I was just at a leadership conference a couple weeks ago, and I had this presented as a different tool. And this is the reason why I'm mentioning it to us on this podcast. Part of the leadership school that we were coaching, we were working with the students on how to better prepare their elevator speeches, how to better answer questions on interviews. And the students, the practicing interviewer, so Steve and I were kind of practicing, like, Steve, why would you like to work here?
I'm a hard worker, and I think that would really be good for your business.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I'm going to give you're ready for the great question. You're on a job interview, and you want a great question.
Uh-huh.
Steve, we're sitting a year from now. Tell me what I've accomplished.
Tell me what I've accomplished in a year, okay?
So basically what they're doing is they're outlining where you fit in.
Wow. In the interview.
That's right. So
that's fantastic.
There's your question that you need to be asking goals. On your next job interview.
Having goals. That's all right, so important.
But you're the person. You're going to be answering questions. You're going to be under a little bit of pressure to do that. You're going to have things you're going to want to answer to, or have them answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, have the person who is asking you these questions use this app. What type of body language are you using? What kind of facial expressions are you using? Are you confident? Are you, not really answering the questions?
Hmm.
What the idea behind it is, there are things that you can do that may be able to train yourself to present yourself better when with this information and practicing, these questions, with your friends and stuff like that over dinner or whatever when you're in college, may make you more desirable as an employee to be hired.
Very good.
So this is how I looked at it. The gentleman who was presenting at his job, and he shows up at many late night programs, is he looks at interviews with people and he's saying, this person is potentially lying. This mm-hmm. person is evading the question. This person's not answering.
You could tell so much from body language and facial expression.
Exactly. So he's an expert in this. And this was the tool that he recommended that the students practice with.
21st century almost lie detector. Not quite, but motion detector.
Well, I mean, think about augmented reality, Steve. Oh. Imagine you've got this tool
in your glasses while you're walking around town all day.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And you're
it's a stunning future.
You're looking for that used car. And
right. And you know who's being honest and you know who's not being honest and you can call them out on it. Well, and you can get accomplished whatever it was you're trying to do.
Not that, the idea is to this is certainly not perfect, but they do claim 92% accuracy.
That's a big claim. That's pretty big.
So let's just say that it's a tool and it's something to play around with. Nice. I've got it on my phone and I've been using it on my wife for a week now. And
she's really annoyed.
That's right. She's not enjoying me.
The app says she's more annoyed today than she was last week when we did this app. Huh.
Exactly.
I'm going to write that down in my notes.
I should probably remember that. I'm a guy. I can't remember too much.
The good news is that The Orville has been renewed for a second season on Fox. This is my favorite show of the new fall season. This is, in my opinion, the best Star Trek on TV. The storylines, the themes that they are using for this is such the science fiction that I enjoy. The science fiction that Gene Roddenberry really outlined in the original Star Trek.
Telling a story, having them beat you over the head with it.
With a mirror up to our current society.
That's very, very nice.
It is amazing that it has happened this way. You don't expect Seth MacFarlane to be the guru of here's what's happening in society. Because think of Family Guy. That's not a mirror of society.
Sure.
It's not. And this really is. Those of you who have not tuned into The Orville, you need to be watching this show.
Well, there you go.
Veterans Day is coming up on Saturday. Happy Veterans Day to all of our veterans. We celebrate all of you who went.
Who've served.
And did it. And were a part of it. And we appreciate everything that you've done for us.
And if your schools are like my school, our local schools. We have an event at our local school. Mm-hmm. They're inviting all the veterans to school. Mm-hmm. They're going to meet with the kids. They're going to have a luncheon with them. So that's the nice part about being in a community that does fun things like that.
One of my favorite things that our district has done is we don't take the day off of school on Veterans Day. We come into school and we invite people in. That is such a better celebration.
Well, for young people, they're the host.
Mm-hmm.
Of their grandparents is a good way of putting it, of dad or mom mm-hmm. coming back in. And, they served at maybe there's something from the military they would like to share. And obviously, for many people who are in the military, they've got painful memories and they have very good memories. And the idea is to be able to honor them for the time that they spent. So we'd like to celebrate our veterans and we'll go on from there.
And thank you for your service. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We're going to be in mid-November next week. Getting up. We're getting there. Thanksgiving is the next holiday, kids. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. You can send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future.